Hi, everyone. This is Gary, and I am on the phone with Mike McDade for this campfire conversation. And so what we wanted to talk about during this time is the idea of coming to alignment points throughout our life, these points where God is now telling us one way or another that we really need to realign our life with what he's shown us about our calling, the effect, weightiness, brilliance, glory of our life that he's been revealing over time. And then he also reveals what he's developed in our character, and he's saying to us, now I need you to realign your life with what I've just shown you, what I've developed in you, what I've brought out, what I've awakened. And, of course, we have many of those in our life. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today. And Mike, I got to know Mike at a calling intensive. Well, when I really got to know him was at this calling intensive. We were in the same group together, and I got to hear his story. I was absolutely amazed at his story, and also in many ways the man that he has become through his story. There were some major alignment points in Mike's life, and I just thought, Mike, you and I could talk about that. So glad you're doing this with us. You know, we're all of us listening. We're all members of Base Camp here, and it's kind of fun to sit around here and tell stories, but we especially want your stories tonight. So why don't you kind of jump in wherever you want to?
Yeah. I think probably the best realignment piece would kind of be the hammer stop when God decided that he wanted to take me back. I was a businessman, really successful, living life on my own terms. And I remember the date very well, February the 12th, 1999. And I'm telling a lot about myself here, but I owned three companies at this time. And work hard all day, go over to a buddy's house, drink a couple of beers, smoke a joint, smoke a couple of cigarettes, and do my normal routine. I'm home by about 9:30 that night. I've got a wife and a six-year-old at the time. And I wake up about 11 o'clock that night, and I am literally feel like I'm having a heart attack. And so I have my wife take me to the hospital, and we go to the hospital, and the guy comes back and says that I have pleurisy, that I'm not having a heart attack. So really, really strange. And so
now, Mike, what is that? Explain, what is that?
Pleurisy is an inflammation of the lungs.
Okay.
A lot of smokers get it. And literally it is it feels like needles being poked into your lungs. So it gives me painkillers and sends me home. That's really good. You know, send an alcoholic home with painkillers. And so I don't smoke all weekend, which is a good thing. But that Monday I wake up throwing up blood and go to the hospital later that day. And, well, actually within an hour we're there. Sandra has a doctor's appointment as well, and she goes on to her doctor's appointment, and I notice that they're taking me literally all over the hospital, running all kinds of tests. And this young doc walks in the room when they finally get me in the room, and he goes, "Mr. McDade, you've rode your body pretty hard." And I was such a smart A at the time, but I said, "Yeah, I work hard, I party hard, and I live hard." And he said, "Well, I hope you enjoyed it." And it still takes the wind out of my sails to even say those words. And I said, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "Mr. McDade, you got about a 50-50 chance of making it out of here tonight." Mm. And I'm not going to bore you with all the details of everything that happened, but it was really tough. to sit there and know that you're going to drown that night. And the next phone call is from my wife, and she says, "You're not going to believe this. I'm pregnant." Mm. And we'd been trying for 6 years to have another child. And so I'm sitting there at my end, the next man that walks through the door is a pastor friend of mine named Ken Anderson, and I frequented his church on Easter and Christmas. He said, "You look bad, Mike." And he said, "I'd like to pray for you." And Gary, I hadn't had anybody pray for me in 20 years. Mm. And that night I sat on my bed as I went to sleep, knowing that there was a good chance I wouldn't be there tomorrow. And I just asked God for one more day. And that's what I've been doing since then, is I wake up literally asking for one more day. I woke up the next day, and pneumonia's completely gone. Pleurisy, the viral pneumonia that I had contracted, it's gone. And slowly but surely, God began to change my life in a fantastic way. I think the big next transition point for me was I was living my father's dream. He was in the computer business, and the wounding that I took from him, I was going to show him that I was better than he was. And so I was really successful in the computer business. And I was running a company at the time called BCI, and I was the vice president of technical services, running all the engineers. And I'll never forget it. I had a dream that this man, Tom Hines, and the CEO, Tony Bailey, were sitting at this black table, and they asked me to become a salesperson and just give up my job so I could keep my ministry. Or I could be the vice president of sales, but I would have to get rid of eyes of the heart. And I can remember waking up from that dream and having this cold, just cold sweat. And that day, it's about 9 o'clock. I look at my secretary. I say, "Look, I've got to go get some coffee. I've got to get out of this because I'm really dying." And I've been kicking around the idea of going back to seminary, either to get a marriage and family therapy degree or, you know, a theology degree of some kind, because I really felt like God was calling me into something different. Mm-hmm. And about that time, I get a phone call from a guy named Chris Goolsbee, who was our CFO at the time. And he says, "Mike, I want to meet you for a cup of coffee. We need to talk." And Chris is not one of these guys that beats around the bush. He's straight to the point. Everything's really serious. And I said, "Well, what do you want to talk about?" And he said, "Well, we'll talk about when I get there." I hung up the phone. I'm riding in my truck, and I literally, and I've told you this before, I don't know that I have ever audibly heard God's voice like this, but he said, "Mike, are you ready?" It scared me so bad that I literally looked around in the back of the truck to see if there was anybody with me. And I said, "Ready for what, God? Ready for what?" And then he starts kind of replaying the dream in my mind. And so I get to the Starbucks on this street in Jackson. And the first thing that I notice is the tables are black. And we sit down, and Chris starts chit-chatting about life and kids and eyes of the heart and all of this stuff. And I said, "Chris, don't blow smoke up my skirt. What are we here for?" And he goes, "Mike, we have a proposition for you." And I said, "Okay." And he goes, "We want you to be vice president of sales." And I said, "Okay." And he said, but you're going to have to give up eyes of the heart. And I said, are there any other options? And he said, oh, yeah, if you want to keep eyes of the heart, we would love to keep you as a salesperson. Hmm. And I just really, you know, I'm following this dream that's not mine. I'm successful in the world's eyes, but my heart is just so far from it. I mean, it is so far not wanting to be in the computer business and do what my father did. I look back at Chris and I said, you forgot option three. And he said, what's that? And I said, January 31st of this next year, this was like at the end of November, will be my last day. I'm going to go to seminary, and you're going to pay me for basically a year's salary and a year's worth of insurance. And he was just floored. I mean, he didn't know what to do with it, but there was something that just felt so good inside of my soul. What's so funny after that is I had no idea how hard it was to get into Reformed Theological Seminary. I thought it was just like a junior college that you walked up to and said, hey, I want to be in your seminary. So I was admitted February the 1st as a special student. And
well, okay, so wait a minute. So here's, I'm astounded not only that God gives you a very descriptive and accurate dream and you walk into it. That's just amazing. And so therefore you kind of even know where to go with it. Well, you know the option three. But
yeah.
What did the guys do when you presented option three? You're going to salary me for a year, give me insurance while I go to seminary.
If you knew Chris, Chris is a Baptist pastor, but he's also an accountant, so he does real high-end CFO stuff with companies. And we had done turnaround-type stuff before together. And literally, I have never seen Chris not know what to say or be speechless. But he was just, I think he was so taken aback, and he almost, it was like he apologized, because he knew that I was offended, because I had built BCI into what it was, or been a real integral part in it. He said, you know, Mike, I can't promise you that. You know, I have to talk to Tony. But if this is what God wants you to do, then, man, just, you know, I hope you're right, and I hope it goes well. It was a strange conversation, to say the least, because he literally, he had no idea where I was in my heart with the computer business. And I had been hanging out with a couple of good counselors, Phil Harden and another guy that I talk about a lot. And we've been doing a lot of men's ministry work together and, you know, been to quite a few Wild at Hearts together. And we were just, you know, we were really enjoying working with men.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. So God gives you this dream. Now, was it just 24 hours between the dream and then the reality of it walking into that meeting?
Oh, yeah. No kidding, Gary. It was a... It was a Sunday night. Yeah, it had to be a Sunday night dream, and it was a Monday morning experience.
Okay, so we're talking, you know,
yeah.
8, 9, 10 hours. All right, so where were you? I mean, so seminary was on your heart. You were already thinking,
yeah.
I need to go a different direction, and what kind of training am I going to need to do that, right?
That's correct.
I mean, how did you even know the idea of going into counseling or getting a degree in counseling?
I can answer that. Our brand of Wild at Heart retreats at the time
mm-hmm.
was a thing called Into the Wilderness. And we had done one that previous August. Now, when this happened was in November. And, you know, this is like our third or fourth retreat together. So we're just getting cocky. You know, John used to say, take it slow, don't rush the field, but everybody did. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing a small group after I've basically given a speech on stepping into your calling, and this young man, his name was Aaron, redheaded guy, young guy, was in my group, and we were talking, and, you know, he's struggling with who he is and everything, and finally he says, you know, after group, he said, Mike, can we go outside and talk? And he says, I need to tell you something. And I said, okay. And he goes, I'm struggling with pornography really, really bad. And I don't know what to do about it. And I knew at that point that I didn't have the skills necessary to really help. I could tell him what I know, and I could tell him what's been said, and I could tell him about books that I had read, but have I really helped somebody break the grip of pornography? No, I hadn't. And I knew I needed more teaching. I needed more instruction. I needed to be discipled, mentored by somebody that could help me through this. And that guy was a guy named Jim Hurley, who runs the counseling part of RTS. And that's who I sought out. And, you know, just started having conversations with him about, you know, should I consider this? And he told me no. Matter of fact, he only let me in as a special student. I get this this picture in my mind. Back in junior high, you know, all of the special needs kids, I went to the special student class.
Mm-hmm. So why did he say no to you, and then why did you go anyway? So start with what was he seeing that he was concerned saying no to you? Don't do it.
Because he knew I was really good at selling things, but was I really good at living? Hmm. Well, you know, I could sell the walk, but was I actually walking it? Mm-hmm. And matter of fact, it's on my bulletin board in my office right now, is this thing that he wrote about me. And when we graduated, this is what he said. God has gifted you richly, and you have shared those riches generously with us, your colleagues, with your clients as well. Thank you for sharing gifts like the warm embrace of friendship, the humble courage to learn, the strength of character to persevere, and an insightful heart of love. May he continue to give lavishly, and may you continue to share it liberally. And it was just, he was the guy that I was supposed to take me through this transition point. Mm-hmm. And he really didn't want to, but we ended up being very close.
Yeah. So you went to seminary, it sounds like more for what you needed to gain, to glean, to learn, more than for the degree.
Oh, yeah. I'm not even a licensed counselor now in Colorado, Gary. Mm-hmm. You know, this is one of the most liberal states, because you don't have to have a licensed professional counselor behind your name, an LPC or an LMFT, and still be able to practice. It wasn't important to me at all. It was the knowledge.
Okay, so we're going back to transitions, realignment points. The first one you shared, which, it's funny, I didn't even think you'd go there. I forgot all about that. But obviously this huge realignment point we come to in our life when we first come to Christ, you talked about that. And now, you know, you're quitting this job you're doing well in. God gives you a dream ahead of time to go into seminary for the preparation, the training for what you need to do. What was that? I mean, were there points of regret, feel like you made a mistake while you were in seminary that you shouldn't have done this maybe or not?
Yeah, man. Did I know it was part of the plan? Absolutely. Were there sacrifices made? I'm glad my wife's not in the room, because there was. We, it was literally probably the hardest 2.5 years of my life, because we literally went to class till 3:30 every day, and then we saw clients from 3:30 to about 7:38 every night. Mm-hmm. And so when you got off at 8 o'clock, you're studying or doing homework for class for the next day. And it was brutal. There's no doubt. And I have said many times that seminary is a soul stealing place, and I still believe that. I think they could work on the spirituality of it a little bit better. But would I trade the knowledge? No, for nothing. Hmm. I've seen it help so many people.
Okay, so obviously, when you get out of seminary, you have got to, you are at a forced realignment point once again, because you, well, I mean, I guess you could just keep staying in school and try to get a doctorate or whatever, but you're at another realignment place in your life. What was that like, going from coming out of seminary, and what did you do next?
You know, that was probably the toughest piece, because from the outside, it didn't look like that much was very successful. You know, I'm literally seeing clients at Eyes of the Heart, doing retreats, teaching men's groups, and having to clean buildings. You know, we cleaned junior high buildings and toilets and everything. I mean, it was tough, and my wife hung in there with me, and she worked at the school, and she cleaned toilets and stuff with me, and I'm sure there were days that she just wanted to kill me, because we had, I was making a lot of money. I was very successful. We never wanted for anything, and now we are, I hate to say it, but we're pretty poor. And working a lot of hours and not really getting paid, and it was, you know, looking back at it, what I was being taught was humility. Hmm. You know, humility's never that fun pill to swallow, but it taught me a lot about who I was and what I was willing to do to continue to support my family and keep doing what I felt like God was calling me to do, and that's, you know, disciple and counsel men. And
So let's say the first year of Eyes of the Heart at a seminary, you are in this thing full time. You're developing it, building it, doing it. Were you loving it, or was it? Or were you not sure, or kind of where was your heart now that you're actually doing and building what you, where, you know, in the direction you were going?
Oh, there's no doubt I was loving it.
Okay.
But there was doubt as into, you know, why is God not blessing it more than he is? Because, you know, there's no money coming in. And, you know, starting a counseling practice in a city where it's saturated with counselors is not a real smart idea. But, it really taught me a lot about who I am and why I was doing this. It just all I can think of is I don't see. I tell you what, you remember when me and you and Sam were at the hotel down there where the lady behind the bar was giving us flack that day?
Yeah, here in the Springs, yeah.
Yeah. I went in to use the restroom in there, and there was a guy using the restroom, cleaning up the toilets and stuff. And I just sat in there and talked to him for a while. There's this, I see people differently because of what I experienced and how I went through that. It taught me to see that image of God in everybody, not just the people that I respect or the people that are successful. You know, it taught me that it's the little guys too.
Mm-hmm.
So there were some in that realignment point. God was teaching me humility.
So, I mean, obviously, really hard financially, and the hours you're spending with your cleaning business and these schools, as well as Eyes of the Heart. Just give us a picture, a thread, kind of the relational friendship thread from when you were working for the company through the time in seminary and now into Eyes of the Heart.
Relational from me and God, or relational with
you and actual friendships, you know?
Oh, man. The friends that I have now, the depth of our friendship is incredible. Ralph McClellan, Greg Gearhart, you know, all those guys back in Mississippi, they're still doing the groups that I set up 5 and 6 years ago. They're still together. The depth of relationships that I have now are unbelievable because of really the gifting that I've honed has helped so many of these men free themselves, you know, God working through me to get rid of their baggage and their bondage. It's been awesome, man. I mean, you know, the friendship that you and I have picked up and really grown over the last 2.5 years. I love the fact that I could call you and say, I'm struggling with this today, dude. What is up? You know, the friendships and the depth of life is so much better.
Yeah. These friendships, all the men you referred to, I mean, they really came out of the starting of Eyes of the Heart, right? More than while you were in seminary.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was Eyes of the Heart, you know, starting all of those things and doing the groups that these deep relationships have come from. And, Reggie Britt, all those guys. The depth of relationship has been awesome, Gary.
Yeah. Okay, so we get the next transition I can think of, or realignment, was when you were thinking about moving to Colorado.
What has that been, 2.5 years ago? Yeah. I think it really, no, it couldn't have been. It had to have been the second time that we had the tribal gathering out in Divide.
Mm-hmm. I think it was, yes.
It's funny. I have found over the last probably 7 or 8 years myself spending more and more time in Colorado. Coming out for a while at Heart Boot Camp, spending the 4 or 5 days, and then the next year coming twice, and then the next year not coming to a boot camp at all, and end up spending 2 weeks. It literally, I found myself out here, I don't think it was last summer. Let's see. Yeah, it wasn't last summer. It was the summer before. I literally spent 8 weeks in Colorado. Me and my wife were sitting in the bed talking about this ranch north of town that a friend of mine's building and doing. And then we were talking about what it meant for me to be at Divide with you guys and the camping that we did and all the experiences and Sam buying me a transmission and just all of that. And we looked at each other one Saturday morning and she said, what are we doing here? Why don't we try this? Why don't we move to Colorado and see what God keeps calling us out there for? Maybe it's something to do with this ranch. And So the whole time I'm thinking it's more and more about ministry. And it wasn't. It was about my family. And over the past year and a couple of months, well, first they moved out here in October of last year.
They, your wife and kids.
Yeah, my two boys.
Yep.
And so I packed their what little up in a truck and an Audi TT, drive them out here, and they move into an apartment. So I go home for 90 days by myself, and I have never been so heartsick in my life. Mm. I literally sat in bed at night and just cried. It was a tough time. It's funny when you're not around somebody for 90 days, you really know how much you love them. Mm-hmm. And so I moved everything out in a truck, me and a bunch of the guys from my Eyes of the Heart groups, loaded up a truck, and I drove it out here by myself and looked for a job and found a counseling job within a couple of months. And started working there and started doing a lot of stuff with this ranch north of town. And it's funny. There's no doubt that my calling is to make men. And I do that through encouragement. But what he was doing with me here is giving me the love of my life back. And me and my wife are probably closer right now than we have been in 20 years.
Hmm.
And it is just really, really rich.
Yeah.
Plus we got a new house.
That's really amazing. I mean, you guys have gone through a lot of hard things. You've sacrificed a lot and had to kind of fight back. I mean, fight for things to get back again, build things again each time. And I know it was hard when you got here too, because again, you were looking for a job. You were wondering, did we do the right thing? You left, you know, decades of relationships in Clinton, Mississippi, and came out here. And I know it was hard.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. So, okay. So what we're talking about, you guys, as we're listening, I'd love for you guys to share some stories or thoughts or ask any questions. But about these points in our life where God says, okay, I've shown you some things. I've developed your strength of heart, and now I need you to live a little differently. And, you know, some are small adjustments, and some are very big adjustments. I mean, you shared some really big ones, obviously, Mike.
Oh, there were plenty of small ones in amongst all those big ones.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and so just, I mean, everyone listening knows the stories about, you know, leaving Ransom Heart, and that was that was one of those times again. Actually, as was leaving when I was with Athletes in Action, Campus Crusade for Christ, just leaving something completely familiar, and you know, I could have stayed either of those places. I could have stayed, but just knowing it's funny. I've always sensed the option of God to stay, saying you may stay. That's up to you. But knowing life would not be the same as it had been there if I did stay, and certainly I wouldn't walk into the life and be the person I was supposed to be without making that transition, you know, that realignment. So,
yeah, I think that you just said that at the end, it would not be your life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's been the hardest thing, because, you know, when you're in the middle of it, it's painful, it's not fun. But when you're looking back at it in retrospect, you can see you can see what he's doing the whole time. I just wish he would tell us a little earlier.
All right. Hey, well, listen, buddy, I wish I'd get a dream like you have says, let me give you a picture of what this is going to look like tomorrow morning when you walk in, and here will be your options.
Gary, God does speak to me in dreams like that, mm-hmm. But it's not an everyday occurrence, and I have never had one happen like that one since.
Yeah.
So I knew that was a huge realignment in my life. I knew that this was bigger than I had recognized up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you know my wife. I mean, my wife is a saint.
Yeah.
But that was one of those days where she was questioning whether I even knew who God was.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Well, you know what, and I need to say, you know, I tell a story of God giving me a warning of the season I was about to come in,
mm-hmm.
not knowing that, you know, 6 months later I'd be stepping out on my own. And so, yeah, different times as well, he has warned me. And that's just the kindness of God to say, I want to let you know so you can prepare, and then also to let you know I'm with you. You know, and the other thing you said, which is so true, how God speaks to you in dreams. I find that sometimes when we feel like we don't hear God, it's because we've so confined the way God speaks.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah, we're listening for a word, and he gives us a picture, so we don't see the picture, you know. And we're looking for a word or a picture, and it's a friend that comes up and says something to us, and we're waiting for it from another source. And yeah, it is really true. You know what? Let me ask you a question. Jeff was asking a question here, and his question was, is Eyes of the Heart operating in Colorado now? And if it does, how does it look? What is it doing in Colorado?
Yes, it is operating in Colorado and Mississippi right now. And it's funny, he kind of took away everything that I love to do back there.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't pull a men's group together in the first 90 days to save my life. There was nowhere for me to speak. It was kind of taking away, you know, why are you doing this? Are you doing this for me? Or are you doing this for you? Or some combination of the two, you know. He really made me look at my motives. And my normal way of doing that in the past was I would just invite a bunch of guys and see who showed up. And we started a small group 2 Mondays ago in my new man cave in the basement of my house. And I wouldn't have picked these 6 guys. God brought them to me. So the answer is, Jeff, yes, Colorado and Mississippi. Ralph, and you've met Ralph. Ralph has stepped into a key role, as well as Lynn Ryan in Mississippi. And they're running the show there.
Okay. That's really cool. Okay, so I've got someone raising their hand. But take them off mute. I actually don't know. It doesn't say who it is, but it's area code 720. So you're okay. Off of mute now.
Right. Yeah, that's Gary. That's Doug Bryan from Aurora.
Oh, hey Doug.
Hey Doug, how are you?
Hey, great. Hey, Mike, really enjoyed hearing you, but I'm pissed. here, and I probably put my phone down about 5 times during your conversation. Pacing the floor, and really it just comes from a deep place of longing and hurt, because you know, everything that God has come through for you
mm-hmm.
has been opposite for me, and yet I've moved into, you know, the heart, to the you know, the places of really pursuing and going after God, sacrificing. And,
mm-hmm.
and I guess what, you know, what is kind of a interesting place for me is that God doesn't always come through in the way that we may, you know.
I would be willing to say he never comes through in the way that you think
yeah.
he's going to.
Yeah.
So because his timetable is not the same.
Right,
Because literally I thought I was coming to Colorado to get a ranch off the ground. And it wasn't what it was about at all.
Yeah, yeah.
It was about humbling me and getting me closer to my boys and my family.
Right. I think it's almost akin to, you know, you go into the oncology unit of a hospital with a bunch of cancer patients, and you know, you're going up and down the halls, and you're meeting them, and then sharing your story, how you've recovered, and how, you know, you're a walking miracle. And frankly,
I'm still screwed up as a football bat, Doug.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, so here's this person in the bed, going, you know, wow, you know, what's up with that? What's up with, you know, he walking up and down the halls, and I'm here. You know, what do we do with that?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Doug. Go ahead.
No, I think God has really, really shown up. And I think what he's really said to me is, you know, Doug, you and I have got to have this relationship first.
Mm.
You know, that is key. Everything you've depended on in life as a man to make life work has not worked for your heart. And so in order to get you back, which for me has been well over 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's really at a place now of, yeah, that daily struggle of bitterness and envy and jealousy and remorse and resignation and all those agreements that are easy to slide into, but really a place of God just gently tapping me on the shoulder and saying, you know, Doug, I told you I'd take care of you. There's no guarantee that that's going to happen, but I will. But there's no guarantee. You know, this whole relationship thing with Jesus Christ and this whole thing about walking with Him does not come with a guarantee.
No,
there's no warranty on it. And so, you know, really, I think for each of us, wherever we are in our lives, you know, Jeff, you said, hey, you know, I'll take the third option next week, or somebody of you have kind of put it on there. Yeah, that's cool. Kind of funny. But on the other hand, it's like, you know, like I told my wife, either we are in this arms and legs or we're not. And man, that is a interesting place to be. But anyway, thank you, Mike, for sharing. It's been great to be at your campfire.
Doug, let me say one thing to you that was probably the hardest thing for me to get in my head, which was like this huge transition for me. And it was learning how to receive love. Because basically what happened to me and the success that began to happen was built around these guys that rallied around my life. They were God with clothes on, and they're the ones that came for me. I, you know, the Greg Gearhart's, the Ralph McClellan's, the Reggie Britt's, those guys, really are what changed the heart inside of me. God used these guys to be Jesus with skin on, and they just showed me love.
That's really good. That's really good, Doug. Thank you, man. I think we can hear the pain in your voice, because I know it's been hard since you transitioned out here and things haven't looked the way that you were hoping they would right away. So thank you for doing that. Hey, I'm going to put another person on, and I'm unmuting them right now, but I don't know who it is. It doesn't identify. It just says wireless caller from 541 area code. So you're on. Does that sound familiar to anyone? 541-207. Oh, go ahead.
This is John.
Hey, John.
Hey, guys. And Mike,
how's it going, John?
That's been an awesome. I mean, I know your story, and just to hear it recapped, and that's been cool. Doug, you know, I was gonna. Well, I guess I'll still share a story, but after hearing that, it's honestly, it's hard because. And, you know, And I've had a tough journey this last, well, decade. And it's really turned the corner this last year and, you know, probably the last 2 years. But I would say the tribal gathering was when it really switched for me.
It was a switching point for me too, John.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of guys. So, and you know, I had this weird experience because at our boot camp meeting last Thursday, our leaders meeting for the Northwest team, we had this opportunity, and Randy, one of our team members, just really wanted me to tell a story, or he wanted to tell a story about some cool things that are happening in my life. And it was a situation where six guys on our team around the table, or whatever that, you know, sort of number, are really hurting. And
yeah,
jobless, health, and part of me is, I know the story has to be told, but part of me is like, you know, I'm in this place of God pushing me up way beyond my comfort zone of being on the radar, success and heart at the same time of pain, but at the, you know, hearing that at the table was really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to Chris Skaggs about this quite a bit on my way home that night, and we kind of came to the conclusion that I've been there. I've been at this place where I'm at the bottom of the bucket near the drain, and I have a brother who's sharing. And I remember back, it's like, I have to hear those stories. If I don't hear those stories, I lose hope. But at the same time, it's just, you know, like today, I this came up to my mind when you were talking, Mike, but, and I don't know what it means, but I took a younger guy out for his birthday for a beer this afternoon, and he's about 34, and I've had a chance to kind of walk alongside him. He works in connecting space like I do, and helping people connect, and he's really been struggling over the last year, and he turned to me in the middle of the conversation. He said, "You've really come into your swing this year, haven't you?" And it kind of caught me off guard because, I mean, I know that's happening, but to have a younger man that's watching me say that was a little bit of like God slapping me upside the head. I mean, Gary, you know this. How many times do people have to tell me I'm a connector for me to believe that? And that.
Oh, dude, that's you.
I'm at this
it is
world,
you, John.
I'm at this weird world level that God's like, when are you going to wake up? And so it was a chance for me to turn around and to tell him, I said, this is your year. And he, like, teared up and looked at me, and I could tell it was beginning. It was his birthday. It was this whole thing. But I don't know. I don't know why I wanted to share that, but that's, you know. And going back, go ahead.
That's what it takes, John. I don't know if you remember at the divide that weekend. That's what we did for each other. I mean, there were countless times where God prompted one of us to say something or do something or walk towards somebody that we didn't know. Hey, did you see John Hard's message? All my phones just died.
I did see that. Yeah. I got it. I'm answering him. Keep going.
Okay, I was making sure it wasn't us. I think we really don't give weight to God using others to bring us through it. We say we're healed of this. I'm on my own, and then we go out there and try to do God on my own. And it just doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. And I don't know who said it earlier, but the whole thing of how we assume it has to do with ministry. And I was thinking about that when you said it. I mean, that was my application early on. I mean, it was, and then having, you know, Ransom Heart and others say, okay, yeah, you're right. It was just a huge detour for me, and I felt like I was in the desert. And I don't know that's, I mean, I don't know your story, Doug, but boy, I mean, I hear your words because I have been in that, you know, it also kind of helps me to listen to hear guys that are, you know, walking and, you know, because I can reflect in that too in those stories, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what was so cool about the Divide trip is we all could relate. It was just, it was spooky because we could all look at each other in the eye the very first day and, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I know you.
Right. Well,
it was just transparency. It was great.
Yeah. And John, some of these guys don't know you, and they don't know the story of you looking like you're probably going to get hired by Ransom Heart to be part of their team. And I mean, the whole environment of this is all happening out there at a boot camp, so it's the big event, and everybody's there, and all this stuff happening, and then, you know, having that killed right there, all over, yeah. Done, it's not going to happen. And I mean, that was a huge thing. I mean, some of these guys just don't know that part of the story of how disruptive and disheartening that was in your life.
That is the word, Gary. And I was thinking about what you said. I had so far and so much to be disrupted before I could get here.
And that's the truth.
I mean, it's still happening. I mean, it happened today. It happened yesterday. I mean, to the point where it's just like, oh, you know, your wife's looking at me like, who are you, you know? I mean,
yeah.
And why are you doing this?
Why are you doing this? And, yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Good.
Yeah.
John,
but
thank you.
I would not, I mean, just in that, I would not give that up for anything. Those long years, those long trials, I mean, man.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Thank you, my friend. I'm going to get the next person on here. So thank you, John.
Yeah.
Okay. So I am now unmuting, you know what? John Hart's gone, I think, because he said his phones were dying. So he was the third one up. Let me see here. Then that brings on, Sam brings up Sam. So let me unmute Sam here.
The man
Sam.
Who knows my story.
You're on, Sam.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about sort of the balance of alignment with risk. It, you know, every time you talked about an alignment, it seemed like God was moving you into some kind of risk as well. And if you could just talk a little bit about your experience of realignment in your life and the risk that God calls you into.
Boy, that's a huge piece of it. Risk has definitely been something that I don't know how to say this without it. Risk, fear of failure is not one of my things that I struggle with, which can be a good thing and a bad thing. But I think that risk really is a part of the equation, and not just a realignment. I think it forces you to trust. I really get pissed off about how we use John 3:16 as the calling card for all Christianity, because the word believe in the Greek is actually pistuio, and it means to trust, to entrust your life with.
Right.
And you know, believe and trust. I believe the wall in my office is brown. To trust God with your life and that He's in the risk with you is a huge step. Even when I thought He had let me down, looking back in the past, I realized that He was actually moving me into something else, or keeping me from losing something. And I think that is a big piece of it, Sam. I think the risk, taking the risk, or a leap of faith, a leap of trust. And I think sometimes we get it in our head that success would look this way. Success for me would have looked like, you know, I'm finished with a couple of books, I'm eyes of the heart's making more money than I know what to do with, and, you know, I'm living in Florida in the winter and Colorado in the summer. But, that's not how it's worked out.
In some ways, I think it's easier for us to trust in our vision of what the future will be. You know, you're going to redo a ranch.
Yeah.
It's sort of like we're trusting a vision, but the risk is trusting that God knows what he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he knows what your vision is, and he wants that for you. But it doesn't mean he's going to give it to you at the time that you think it's going to happen, just because you're moving forward and making decisions. I think that's where the humility piece has come in for me is, if you look at Mike McDade, from what the world and culture tells you is successful, I'm not. I'm just a poor white guy in northern Colorado that drives around a 73 convertible Mustang loving life. I'm just really enjoying it and giving my gift to people as they come across my path.
Hmm. Yeah, and you know what, Mike? The thing that, as I'm listening to you and Sam talk, and one of the things that hits me about this conversation, your story, is that you were able to distinguish, live with the idea that calling, you know, there's calling and then there's roles and then there's assignments in our life.
Oh, no
because,
doubt.
Because here you are, you know, you're going to seminary and you're starting Eyes of the Heart, but you're also having to clean, you know, do a janitorial service for junior high schools.
Yeah.
That
they
was
don't
a role.
Hit the rim very well.
Right. That was a role while you were working on letting the world feel the effect of your life. You were building a ministry. And that's really, I mean, when you came out here, you kind of had to do that all over again. But, I mean, here you were saying, well, I part of the weightiness, the glory, the brilliance of my life actually can be a job in counseling, and I'm going to work to see if I can get that to pay the bills, though I don't want to do that all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And so it seemed like you kept the distinction between calling, roles, and assignments, you know, and that seemed to be helpful. You seemed to do that well.
Do you remember the day that I called you when I was working on Reggie Britt's mission statement, and I wrote the statement down on the wall, you encourage others to see things differently. I'll never forget. I mean, it's like it was kind of like God was giving me this little trinket while I was working on this stuff of, Mike, this is who you are. This is all you are. I love the fact that you love the ranch, and I love the fact that you love Eyes of the Heart and working with men, and I love the fact that you love counseling, and I love the fact that you love working with Gary at Noble Heart and doing retreats and things together. But as long as you're just offering that, I love the way you're doing it. I love you. This is who you are. Now you kind of get it. And it wasn't like I get it, like there's nothing going wrong in my life, but it was such a day of clarity.
Yeah. Well, Mike, this has been a great conversation. We're a little bit after 8, so we're at an hour. And thank you for kind of sharing these different parts of your life and the journey of it. And this has been good. I just think we so often forget that our journeys are similar in that, you know, there's clarity and there's decisions that have to be made, and the decisions don't always mean that it just works. All of a sudden there's sacrifice that we didn't plan on, but, you know, and then there's just the idea of just trying to rest in the love of God that he's saying, I'm I'm happy with you. It'll be okay. You're going to have to pay a price. Yeah, we have to work. And anyway, it's just, it's always good to hear a real life story, you know, and you shared yours with us. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me, Gary.
Yep, you're welcome. So, guys, it's been good. We'll do another conversation next week, and I'll be back with you on that. So thank you, everyone. See ya.